Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is a result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
I'm trying to get some light on the situation. Are we live yet?
We are live. All right.
Good morning. Good morning. I come on, right. Well, that's a little better.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
All right. We are live.
Yes, yes, yes. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Oh, it's a wonderful day to be alive, don't you think? I think it's wonderful that we are still here. And we might as well do something while we're still here. We might as well just breathe and enjoy the essence of life because we were given, and it's called a present. It's called a present. You know how many people woke up in the yesterday mind? How many people woke up in the past? How many people woke up worrying about things they can't change, you know? And you know, it's so overburdened. That's a good word to use. And we want to embrace life. We want to embrace life today. So you might as well breathe and do something with those wonderful 24 hours just today. Just today. That's all you need to be concerned about. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, just today. Welcome, welcome. My name is Dr. Debbie Green, and this is Soulful Solutions, where I help you find solutions for your soul. That's what I do, and I want to be able to help you understand some things. So this show is focusing on grief and a loss of a loved one, and how we process that mentally, emotionally, even spiritually, how we can get through those things. And this thing is called life. It's called life. And that's one of those things we get challenged with from day to day. But all is well. All is well. Just allow yourself just to understand it. And things will be so much better. Good morning, Naila.
Yes, grand rising. Good morning. And for all of you who are watching and enjoying us online, you can have a visual image of this beautiful woman, Dr. Debbie, on Facebook. Just go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. And you can see the beautiful face that goes along with that wonderful, soothing voice. And you will just be enthralled as we talk about something that often is hard to talk about, and that is death, transition, the exit out of the body back to the non-physical. And all of us are going to make that journey at some point. And the good thing is that we don't know when, so that way we don't focus on that. We instead focus on, as you say, while we're here. Let's focus on while we're here. But the hard thing is when someone leaves us and we weren't ready for them to go. And maybe we didn't say, and I always hear people say this, I wish I had told them how much I love them. Yeah. I hear that over and over again. You know, what's interesting, I think about it, I don't know if you're a Star Trek fan, but I remember this one episode, Spock's father, and Spock was the Vulcan. All you Star Trek people, just bear with me. The story, of course, the Vulcans lived to be a long time. His father was like 200-something years old, and then he died, and the two of them had been at odds and hadn't really resolved it, and one of the characters, Data, who happened to be an android, but he was very logical. He was like, but why didn't they choose to resolve it during all that time they had? And, you know, it made you think, okay, you had 200 years, and you and your son aren't getting along, and then you die, and that's still unresolved. Well, you know, 200 years might as well be 20 years. If you spent a lifetime and you didn't resolve something with someone, and then they die, but you had all that time that you let something linger, and you didn't resolve it. Why did you choose to not resolve it? And so that's something people should think about. I always think about that saying, never go to bed mad, you know, at someone. And a lot of times someone leaves us and maybe the last conversation we had was harsh words or, you know, something that we really didn't mean, but we were angry at the time. And then when they leave and you didn't get a chance to fix it, how does that make you feel? And that's one of the hard things it is to talk about. I've seen some deep grief from people, oh, I wish I hadn't said that, or I wish I hadn't told them I was sorry. And I think I told this story last time, so if I'm going to repeat myself, I don't have Alzheimer's, I don't think. But I just wanted to say, for those who maybe didn't hear it, when my husband, he was on his last hours, and a friend that had not, they had gotten into an argument and hadn't spoken for a couple of years, and he said, oh, I heard your husband is making his transition, and is there a way I could talk to him? Is there some kind of way? I said, well, he can't, he's at a stage, he can't respond to you, he can't speak right now, but I can put the phone up to your ear and you can say whatever you need to say. So, you know, I put the phone to my husband's ear, and this man just poured his heart out, you know, just I'm so sorry and I love you and all those things that he wanted to say before my husband transitioned. And so after he was done, you know, and I put the phone back in my ear, and he said, I'm so glad I was able to do that. I wouldn't have been able to live with myself if he had passed away and I hadn't had a chance to apologize. And so that was a very important thing.
Yes.
But sometimes we don't get a chance to. So how do you deal with it when the last thing you've said to someone was something hurtful and then they leave? How do you forgive yourself? That's it.
That's it. That is so, and it's a very touchy subject, Naima, and a lot of things can have bearing on that, you know. But I want to encourage everyone that your loved one is at peace. They don't feel the emotions that you feel, you know. And this is for you. It's for you. It's not that, you know, the reckless, you know, reconciling is for the loved one, because the loved one is at peace. So when you feel and you have those stirring emotions of unsettlement, entanglement, as I call it, not being able to bring closure, know that when you bring closure with yourself, you have brought it with them. And you may not understand it at first, but it's a process, and it shouldn't trigger you. It shouldn't make you feel worse. It shouldn't make you feel guilty or shameful, because it's an error, and that's all you need to know, that it is an error. An error is not a mistake. It is something that happens because the solution wasn't thought about at that particular time. And allow that to, you know, to resonate in your being, that they still love you. That's all they know is love right now. They don't know anything else. You know, when we transition, again, we're not attached to the physical person. The physical person feels emotion. It feels uncomfortable. It feels discomfort. Physically, mentally, and emotionally. But the spirit, the soul, does not feel those things. You know, it doesn't mourn. It doesn't go through a series of shifting of emotions. It just knows peace. You see? That's all it knows. So they will want you to be at peace, because the bloodline lives on. It lives on through you. So when you find peace in it, when you allow yourself to release and let go, when you allow yourself to release and let go, then you have done such a wonderful thing for yourself as well as for your loved one, because that's what they will want. They will want that. And sometimes things do happen, you know, prior to a transition that we didn't know, we might have had a disagreement with that loved one, or something unsettling happened. know, maybe they didn't know how much you loved them. Maybe they didn't understand the importance of what you wanted them to understand in this life, you know. You may have some separation anxiety there. You may have a codependent lifestyle between you and that loved one. You enthralled yourself with different, you know, feelings that that person felt or went through in this life. So when that time comes for you to allow that person to leave, it feels rigid. It feels hard to let go.
Yeah.
And you feel yourself, you have to, you know, I must suffer. And that's sometimes we feel that way. And why am I not feeling guilty? You know, well, all the other loved ones moved on, but I'm still holding on to something.
Now, why is that? Why are people feeling that they should be sad, and if they're not sad, there's something wrong? I've seen people feel extreme guilt if they, you know, and I've heard them say things like, well, I just can't cry, you know, and then they feel bad that they're not expressing grief in the way the society is expecting them to, as if there's something wrong with them. And I understand that when there's a transition and, of course, you're going to miss the person, but really sometimes it just isn't a sad occasion, and it shouldn't be, because, as you said, the person, they're not suffering, they're not sad, they're glad, they're gone. I mean, they've gone home. But I know that some people, the way culturally they've been conditioned is that if you're not sad, there's something wrong. Like, I've seen people that have had children at a funeral. Maybe there's a playground or something next to the church or a park or something, and so the children are laughing and playing, and then I've seen adults reprimand them, like, you're not supposed to be doing that. This is a funeral. You're supposed to be grieving, you know. Not that. And, well, the children, they don't have, you know, grandma died, okay, but especially if there wasn't really this close relationship, they don't really feel what you think they should be expressing. Their children. And I've seen people reprimand children for not being properly mournful. What do you think about that? Is that something that we should be reinforcing with our children? You must be sad. Someone died. Don't you dare laugh. That's inappropriate. And if that's not appropriate, how do we change that cultural belief?
Well, grieving is an independent thing. So some people, especially with children, it's unbeknown to them. Some children don't say anything. Some children be quiet, and some children are not all the way aware that, you know, understanding transition. So they handle it the best way that they know how. And, of course, you know, our older counterparts feel that grieving is supposed to be this mournful, grief-stricken time. Funerals are very seldomly happy. You know, we should be celebrating. I believe it should be a homegoing celebration. But we mourn the physical. That's really what it is. We attach to the physical, and society does put a damper on exit. They put a damper on transition. But I think parents should allow their children to grieve or to express their opinions of death. I don't think it should be something that's suppressed, for sure. And it should help them understand. You know, it may be a time where a child wanted to say, well, Mommy, I didn't get the opportunity to tell Grandmother that I loved him before they passed.
Mm.
And that hurts. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye, you know. And again, you know, if the parents are very understandable to soothe that particular situation, they will let them know. Well, grandmother knows, you know, she knows that you love her. And sometimes we don't always get the opportunity to bring closure. And, you know, it's not a negative thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just that time sometimes gets in front of us before we can bring those things to an end appropriately. So I just want to let everyone know that you know, don't put yourself into a position to be grief-stricken or even unhappy because of that situation. And if I could share a story quickly. I know this person that just recently, his brother passed away this year, and they had a disagreement, and it was his younger brother. And all his life, he's always been taking care of his younger brother, and his younger brother had a habit of addiction, and he was trying to do everything he could to try to help him, you know, move beyond this, you know, habit that was taking his life away. So they were right in the process of going through these changes with the mother, you know, selling the mother's home, and they got into this argument, and they kind of separated, you know. And what happened was the next day, the brother then overdosed.
Oh my.
And he died. So
that's hard.
The person that I'm talking about was a good friend of mine.
Mm.
And I wanted to bring some closure in that. And it's a very difficult thing when you experience sudden death to that magnitude and you don't get the opportunity to say, hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know? So that can lead to different feelings of unrest. It can lead to different, you know, different ways of you thinking about yourself. You know, and all of these things can happen. Unforgiveness with self can happen. And as I encouraged and helped him to soothe, because that's why I call it, I helped him to understand that you were the caregiver, you were the caretaker for such a long time. And you were there for this person. This is family. You did all you could do. I mean, you can't change a person's decisions. You can't change their choices. So you cannot take that upon yourself to blame yourself because of a choice that he made.
I see that a lot of times if somebody is struggling with a family member with an addiction or alcoholism or whatever behavior that is reckless or endangering their lives, and then that person does finally, they die from their choices.
Yes.
There's still a feeling of, I should have been able to do something. I should have been able to help them. I tried, but I should have done more. And I see people carry that burden of guilt because of someone else's decisions, even if it's, you know, reckless driving while drunken driving. You try to get.
Yeah.
I told him not to leave. I told him not to drive. I should have taken his keys. I should have done something. I mean, there's always this feeling, I could have prevented this from happening. How do you help people deal with acceptance that a person made a decision and it resulted in their death, and you are not to blame because it was their decision? How do you help people process that so that they can accept the fact that this was the person's choice
Mm-hmm.
Their free will choice, and they can let go of the guilt about it, as if they could have stopped it.
Right. And the hardest, again, the hardest thing for a person to understand, if they are codependent, which is, you know, the term of codependent is when your world revolves around another person's world, and their world revolves around you. So it's, that's when the entanglement comes. And so whatever choices that person makes, and in this case, it's a choice of something that is totally out of your control, and it becomes a very difficult thing to accept. You must know that that is not your burden, and that sometimes we accept, we adapt to burdens very quickly,
yeah.
Because we want to save. We have an innate ability to want to protect and save.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want anyone to hurt. We don't want anyone to go through changes. We don't want, you know, none of that. You know, but unfortunately, when things happen, they happen without our permission. We don't get the opportunity to say, hold on a minute, this can't happen to this person because, you know, I'm supposed to protect them. I'm supposed to be there.
Mm.
So if I can't protect them, then they, you know, I don't want them to feel alone. I don't want them to feel that I didn't do the best I could do. And so, and when we get, again, into the entanglement.
Yeah.
And the entanglement is the one that causes the grief. It causes even depression if we're not very careful, because that's a stage of grief. So we go into the what if. If I've done this, what if I've done that?
Yeah.
You know, then we get angry. Then we go through, you know, confusement of it all. We get disorganized. We go through all of those things until we hit the ground. And the ground is, there's nothing I can do. It's out of my hands.
Yeah.
It's out of my hands. But you will go through emotions. But you remember, the goal is to keep you safe. Sometimes we're so busy saving the world and we don't even save ourselves.
Mm.
You know? And I understand love. I understand being a caretaker, a caregiver. I understand that you feel responsible, obligated, devoted. But at the end of the day, you know, one must take care of oneself before they can take care of anyone else. So this is extremely important, especially in this season, you know.
Yeah.
Self-care is important in any arena.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think that is something we are not taught, is to take care of ourselves.
Yes.
And our own sense of well-being. There's always a feeling that if you did something wrong, you should punish yourself by feeling bad.
Right.
And yeah. I don't know where that comes from. I didn't realize that I carried a lot of that kind of feeling. Just recently, just understanding that the pain I felt, I caused myself.
Mm.
And no one is making you suffer. Your own thoughts make you suffer. And if you're believing that you deserve to suffer, you will make yourself suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a lot of what holding on to grief and guilt does. It's the belief somewhere in your mind that you deserve to be punished.
Right. And
that's what keeps people punishing themselves. We got to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about, well, I've got a friend that's going through a guilt, shame situation, and maybe you can assist in helping them change their thinking about what happened so that they're not living with this ongoing grief and guilt about someone passing. So we'll be back after this quick break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. If you're on our switchboard now and have a statement you'd like to make, press 1. That'll light your number up, and we know you have something to say. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. And if you've joined us live on Facebook, feel free to write in your comments, and we'll share them with our listening audience. We'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
This is Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, spiritual counselor and advisor. I invite you to a private reading in the areas of business, health, finances, relationships. My introductory cost of $20. Please call because there is a higher power that can help me help you. 312-802-4743. Peace and blessings to you all. Call me. 312-802-4743.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan with Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses. And we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being. And we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
Debbie Green, dealing with unforgiveness after a sudden death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a friend who struggled with saying to someone that they love, "I wish you were dead." And a few days later, that person died. And I had a really awful argument. And this was the source of guilt that they had. They felt they had spoken it into existence. And they struggled with this for years. And I had another friend that said to a loved one, it was a positive thing, but she said, it's like, you know, you're such a good person. Good people like you don't live long. And then that person died suddenly, an act of violence, and she felt she spoke that into existence. And so I watched both of these two people struggle with extreme feelings of guilt, as if they spoke into existence that person's sudden end. How do we help people understand that your words can't kill someone? Or sometimes people do feel like my words made this person die. Of course, you probably know Maya Angelou's story, that the man who sexually assaulted her. And when she spoke about it, man ended up dead. Well, her uncles, you know, they kicked him to death, you know. But she felt like she caused his death by speaking the words that he had done this to her. And she didn't speak again for, I think, something like 8 years. She was, like, you know, mute. She would not speak. I don't know if it was eight, but it was long, several years. From the time she was eight to the time she, I think, was entering her teen years. And during that time, of course, she absorbed a lot of written material and just became brilliant. But she was traumatized by the death of this man who had assaulted her, and she felt like her voice caused him to die. So I've seen people feel like they said something and put the thought out in the atmosphere, and somehow their energy caused that person to pass away in a way that wouldn't have happened if they hadn't said something. How do you help people deal with those kinds of feelings of guilt that they literally caused the death of someone by speaking it into existence?
Well, we do know that words do have power.
Yeah.
We do understand that, but the thing about it is the predetermined factor here is we don't control another person's journey in this life. Even if it's like that inopportune time, the timing and frequency just, again, aligned up in the universe, that's what happened. And it wasn't by any means the fault of the person that's speaking. It's just that's the timing. That is the timing. And that timing is sometimes not what we want it to be. Sometimes it's you know, it's very unusual when those things happen, because we call it deja vu. If you ever experienced deja vu, where, you know, you may say, wait a minute, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
I've done this before. And again, it's the same process. It's the timing of the universe and the timing of what you're saying and what you're doing. And sometimes they do clash. You know what I mean? They do clash. But one should not blame themselves for another person's death, and because that is you're putting so much pressure on yourself, you know, And remember, you know, life and death is in the tongue, but we don't hold life and death in our hands.
Yeah.
When a child is born, we don't know we may know round about the time, but we don't know the exact time. When someone leaves this earth, it's the same exact way. It's the same process, you know. So, again, you know, the mind will attach itself to things, Naeem, and I notice that when things like this happen, the mind then expands and gives these, you know, thoughts of I don't want to really call it grief. It's just that it tries to rationalize what happened, you know. And then here comes that thing called guilt, or, you know, oh, did I do that? Oh, my goodness, why did I say what I said? I shouldn't have done that, you know. I spoke it in existence. You know, what kind of person am I? Okay, now we're self-defeating.
Yeah.
We're self-defeating.
Yeah.
And that's not going to help the situation, and it's definitely not going to change it.
Yeah.
And this is what the mind does, because the heart is trying to find peace in it, and the mind is trying to rationalize. That's what happens. And, you know, and again, it's one of those things that we will not have the answers to. So some things we just don't have the answer, you know, of the why. Why did this happen? You can think about it. You can assume you may know. But to be honest with you, there's not an answer. Sometimes death does not give an answer. It's a period. It's a dot. It's a period. And it's up to us to allow time to do its greatest work. Time is put in place to move into another area.
Yes. Well, Zelda, our Monday morning mindfulness host, joins us with these words. It's grand rising, beautiful queen, sisters. Great example of the power of our words. Mindfulness matters.
Yes.
Yes, the power of your words. And that is something to remember when you are angry, is what you allow to come out of your mouth.
Yes.
Because you can't take it back once you've said it. Even if you apologize, you have put the energy of those words out into the universe. So we do have to be mindful. And I think all of us have said things we regret saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be very upsetting if someone passes away and the last thing you said to them was something hurtful. And this is why, you know, I think about people who hold grudges for years against, you know, siblings. Now, I have seen situations in families where siblings did not speak for years over some little thing that happened in childhood. They might still be holding anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person passes away, and they're just so grief-stricken, like, ah! You know, it's like the situation like Dr. Spock and his father, 200 years, and you all, you know, at odds, but why did you choose not to resolve that in the time that you had? And it's the same thing when I see people holding grudges. And then at the funeral, you know, they're the first one to fall all over the casket. And I'm thinking,
yeah.
But you could have fixed that situation, and you chose not to. Did you realize that they weren't going to live forever? And at some point, you were going to be faced with the fact that you chose to spend a lifetime in anger over something that really was resolvable. So how do you help people before that time of regret, if it's possible, to realize this person isn't going to be with you forever, and you're holding on to an emotion that you can't fix once they transition?
Right.
Is there
Absolutely.
A way to help people see into the future so they can choose in the present to resolve a conflict with someone that they love but they're angry with?
Yeah. This is somewhat of a very delicate topic as well, Naima, is when people hold things inside and they hold it inside, not like you said, they hold on to unforgiveness, and unforgiveness turns toxic. So the words that should have been spoken at that particular time is not spoken, and they cause themselves such an injustice to not bring closure for themselves, not just for the person that is passed on, because guilt is not always, you say, well, guilty people, you know, that means that they're bad or negative. But no, when you feel guilt, that means you're human, you know, that feels, I mean, some things don't get said in the right timing, and we think we always have time to do everything, you know. One will procrastinate over the smallest things sometimes, and we put things off because we don't want to confront. We don't want to deal with it now. We want to ignore it. We want to, you know, we go through denial. We want to push it aside. There's so many reasons why a person wouldn't just say what's on their heart, you know, at the time. But, and of course, then times like, okay, you know, I gave you the opportunity to bring closure. And we never know when time says it's ended for ourselves, much less anybody else. So, you know, never do yourself the injustice of holding on to things, you know, holding on to words that should be said. There's always a way to even say the most angered thing assertively. If you're unhappy because something that didn't go right, something that they didn't understand, being taken for granted, or whatever the case may be, you know, always allow yourself to grieve properly. And grieving is not just when a loved one leaves suddenly or terminated death. It's when that person is no longer in your life. Because it could be a disagreement, you want to bring closure. And, you know, humility is a very powerful tool. When we humble ourselves down to understand what is the right thing to do, you know, what will be to bring the peace? Because really that's all you want. You really just want the peace in it all.
Right, you just want peace. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a friend who is in a lot of emotional pain because she was in a relationship with a man who was married. And this is a very common thing. She was in a relationship with him for over 10 years. And he was one of those men that had a wife and a mistress. And the wife knew about the mistress and was very, of course, angry. He was in that situation where he didn't want to leave his wife. He didn't want to leave the mistress. So their relationship spanned a 10-year period. And then he died. And regardless of who had the marriage license, they were both emotionally married to this man. But, of course, the mistress was told she would not be welcome at the funeral. And she was not to come around at all, you know, with the wake and all of those things. And she really is grieving because her relationship cannot be acknowledged and she could not attend his, you know, homegoing celebration. And of course, she was nowhere listed on the obituary as being having been a part of his life, even though she was a part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as we spoke, and she's crying and saying, you know, people don't understand, I loved him, you know, and they made me feel like I didn't have a right to love him, and, you know, for whatever financial reasons, he chose not to divorce his wife, but he also, he loved the mistress, and he spent a lot of time with her, but her presence was, of course, a source of pain for the wife. So in watching this drama, and I know there are many who are living this drama, when the time came of his transition, she had no way to openly express her grief or at least attend his funeral. And you know, some of her friends told her, well, look, you know, you shouldn't have been in that relationship anyway, and that's what you did.
Yeah.
But emotions are what they are. Ties are what they are, and her grief is real, whether people disapproved of their relationship or not, it existed. How do you help someone handle that kind of grief when when society condemns them for even having the feelings that they have for someone because of the circumstances and how we have defined who may love and who may not love and all of that? How do you help someone deal with their grief in that situation?
Well, we can definitely say that was a choice that she made years ago. And I hope that choice was made considering all of these things that was bound to happen.
No one
ever sees the end. They only see just what they see, just what they want to, you know, acknowledge. So that being said, there's only one way to deal with that, because unfortunately it's too many dynamics that she would have to weed through to even get to bring closure physically, okay? Mm. You know, so she had to really bring closure intimately within herself, which is remember the happy time, remember the times that she spent with this individual, and let the memories, you know, of that relationship help her to, you know, bring some comfort to her. Because it's funny that you even said that, because that happened to a good friend of mine last year. She was in a relationship, the same thing, 12 years, and was not allowed to come to the funeral. And it was very difficult for her to do so. And as I told her at that time, I said that the only way you're going to get through this is just to really, anytime those waves of emotions start to come of discomfort, you think about the happy times. Think about the times that you shared with that person, and how the love that you had, the comfort of the love that you had, and let that be your go-to, because otherwise, that grief will literally destroy you. It will put you at a very disadvantage in life, and you won't be able to live the life that it's the afterlife that you need to live and adjust to the new normal, because that's what it is. It's a new normal. Now it's time to start over. And I think, you know, not even people are afraid to start over. They want things to be the same.
Starting over is not easy. I mean,
it is not.
I definitely,
it's a fear with that.
Well, you know, I can identify with people who face that thought with fear, you know, after 20 years of a marriage to, you know, a man who was my partner in life, business partner, friend, you know, father of our child, and all of that, it was terrifying for me to suddenly be without a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And to, you know, face the world of dating and all of that, knowing that people are so emotionally scarred by a society that is very hostile. And usually if you've gone, it's one thing if you've gone through the death of a spouse, you know, okay, that relationship, whatever it was, it's over. But when someone has gone through a divorce, that's grieving of a different kind.
Yeah.
And usually there are deep emotional wounds after a marriage that ends in divorce in ways that doesn't happen when the marriage ends because of someone's transition. And so, you know, there's a certain point in your life where everybody has a past that includes a lot of different relationships, a lot of breakups, sometimes children left over from relationships that may have ended badly. So you might have emotionally scarred children involved and all of that. And stepping into that world was terrifying for me because I didn't want to be one of the emotionally scarred women that I see so many, particularly in our generation, because there's so much that happened. Well, things happen in every situation, every generation, but our generation faced the extreme drugs, the extreme violence, the extreme incarceration. You have so many people who have experienced traumatic life events that have affected them and have made them very unfit. As one of our hosts, attorney Wendy Williams, who has been in family law for like 20, 30 years, she speaks about being unfit for a relationship. But when you are holding on to grief, anger, unforgiveness from multiple past ended relationships,
mm-hmm.
and then trying to connect with someone in a healthy way, that can just be almost impossible. And, you know, we tend not to get counseling for whatever reason. We think we should just, you know, like suffer through it. So we tend not to know that we're wounded. It's like somebody suffering a gunshot wound and not going to the doctor or the emergency room like, oh, well, eventually it'll heal. Yeah, it will, but, you know, you're going to have a bullet inside of you and, you know, that's going to cause problems and then you're going to have an ugly scar. So, you know, why not go and get help when you are wounded? Well, we tend not to do that. We just let it heal badly with all of the, you know, infection and everything inside.
Correct.
So stepping into that arena, it was terrifying for me because I know that people have been through a lot of difficult things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It is. One thing about, you know, these topics that people don't all, like you said, don't often really take seriously is getting help. When you know that it's affecting your life, if it affects your sleeping, if it affects your eating, if you're starting to isolate, if you're closing and shutting down, now we have a problem. 3 days a week, 2 weeks, and you can't even, you know, it's hard, but even getting up in the morning, you know, your energy is low. Okay. Depression is coming. It's coming. It's knocking on the door. So the goal is to do something before something happens. And when you allow yourself to revisit those feelings openly and go and allow yourself to express yourself in words, because that's what's going to have to happen, you have to open up the Pandora box. You cannot just pretend like it's not there. A lot of people, they seem functional. Sometimes they get into addictions. They start drinking.
Mm.
They start doing drugs, trying to soothe the pain.
That's take another break, but when we come back, I want to talk about what are the signs of depression, because a lot of times people, like you say, they keep functioning, but the mm-hmm. things that they're doing are dysfunctional because they're trying to soothe the pain, and, of course, drinking is one of them. So how do you tell when you've gone from being that, you know, social drinker to somebody who's using alcohol to self-medicate? So mm-hmm. we'll talk about that when we come back. And, of course, if you're on our switchboard now and have a question for Dr. Debbie, press 1. You're listening to and watching Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green, dealing with unforgiveness after a sudden death. We'll be right back after this quick break, and we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. See you.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our host. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution.
Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. And this is Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. Today we're talking about dealing with unforgiveness after a sudden death.
Yes, what a topic. Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, I see, well, I have experienced firsthand people who use alcohol as a way to mask the pain of their grief, sadness, depression, feelings of unworthiness, whatever they struggle with. Alcohol becomes the way to numb the pain. Problem is, of course, after you sober up, the pain is still there. So that's why they have to keep drinking. And I didn't know, of course, until I was an adult that this is what I was witnessing in the adults in my life. And I think sometimes children get the feeling that they're the one that's triggering the person to drink. Oh, they drink,
yeah.
You know, my presence is upsetting to them, they don't like me, or whatever the case may be. But often we internalize adult behavior as children, we internalize it as being a reflection on our lovability or our unlovability. And many people who grow up with alcoholic parents will feel that they drink because they don't like me, you know, and that's kind of a hurtful thing.
Yeah,
to believe.
It is.
But how do we recognize when someone is using alcohol to deal with depression? And I see it a lot. You know, I've seen it a lot where someone dies and then their loved one, their spouse or children or whatever, or even parents, will suddenly start drinking more. How do you know when you have, I guess, crossed the line and begun to use that as a crutch rather than deal with the pain of your grief?
Well, one thing about addiction and grief is, and this is more common than most, that person had a loved one that dealt with grief the same way. So they were introduced to that, you know, early in life. Like, you know, for example, when grandfather was unhappy, he would take a drink, you know, and that one drink could turn into three or four drinks, and you know, it was a go-to. They call it, you know, back then it was like liquid courage, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I need that courage to go on and to deal with this thing that I'm dealing with, you know, because, you know, you can't drink it away, but they seem to think that they could, or, you know, that it was an option. And, of course, addiction is one of those cover-ups of pain, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a coping mechanism. Some people compensate in thinking that they're compensating, you know, to fulfill that whatever it is that they don't have, you know, so they drink so they don't have to think about it. Because, you know, alcohol or drugs gives you a different mindset, but alcohol is a depressant.
Mm.
So if you are depressed, you become more depressed.
People don't realize that.
You know? And these are the after effects. So when you get to the end of the journey, you wake up the next morning, it's still there. It's not going anywhere. Because it's not what you're putting in your body, it's what needs to come out.
Yeah.
Something needs to come out.
It needs to come out.
It needs to come out in words. It needs to come out, you know, and feelings needs to, you know, these feelings and these emotions that are coming to the surface are only there to ask you, what do you want to do with me?
Mm.
What do you want? I'm going to keep coming back. You could suppress me, push me down in the heart, put me to the back of the mind, all you want. But I'm just going to come back to you. And I'm going to, if you're not answering me, I'm going to have to get stronger and stronger. Until you tell me what it is that you want, need to do. So the subconscious mind, it's a very unusual thing, you know. Subconsciously, we think that we need something tangible to fix it.
Yeah.
And that's what addictions are, you know. We want, you know, we don't want to, we figure if we drink that little small smidgen of time that we're not thinking about it, okay, that's okay. But here comes another one. Another one. Now you have developed a habit of running away because that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, avoidance. So you never really learn how to cope with difficult situations because the habit, as you say, it's a response. When something happens, I run from it. I go get a drink. Any kind of stress, I go get a drink. Any sadness, I go get a drink. So that just becomes the go-to response.
That's your coping mechanism, but it's not. It's a form of dealing with your fear. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. That's how you think you can deal with your fear, but then it's going to come a time when that doesn't even work anymore.
So what happens when that stops working? When you drink and drink and drink and somehow you feel you can't make yourself feel better using alcohol anymore, what's the next step? Is that when people get to that point of suicidal behavior when they just can't take the pain anymore, they can't drink it away, they can't drug it away? They're just tired of feeling bad. Is that when they go over the edge, so to speak?
Yes, because now it becomes what they call a dual diagnosis.
Mm.
It's not just addiction. It's depression mixed with addiction. So depression, if it's not lifting, as one would say, if you're not, you have to separate them. You got to separate addiction from depression. Because if you don't, if they stay together, they will cause a lot of, I call rupture. They cause rupture in the mind because you only get more depressed. Then you start self-defeating, you know, I can't get better, no one loves me, I am a failure, nothing is working, I'm miserable. You get to that point, then you start self-sabotaging, which is the addiction. Because think about it, you're not getting any better and you're constantly still doing. You still have the same habit. And so the habit, you're not decreasing the habit. And it's just making everything worse. So that's self-sabotaging leading to self-destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do have those thoughts, I call them fleeting thoughts of, I can't go on, this is not working anymore, you know, then you start literally creating virtually a reality of, you know, of just total shutdown. You're shutting down. And if you need to then seek help at some point, and, you know, we have this thing, it's called resilience inside of us. Even when sometimes we don't even want to do it, we find ourselves doing something different in that small smidgen of time. It could be someone, a friend, a loved one, say, hey, you got to get some help. And you have a clear thought right in that moment. You know what? You're right. And you go seek help before it's too late. And sometimes people wait for the too late to come. You know?
What is it about, I guess, seeking help that our society has stigmatized. It's like you're weak if you can't just, you know, buck up and just face this. And a lot of times women, you know, particularly black women, we always feel like we're supposed to be the strong woman and just take everything. And usually what we do, we eat. I had a friend recently who had, he had left the country for about 7 or 8 years. Back in the 90s, and we came back, you know, years later. He said, what happened? Why are all the black women fat? And I said, well, you know, we're in a lot of emotional pain.
Correct.
A lot of relationships that have broken, and we're not allowed to express it. so we eat. That's how we cope. And that's why the obesity has increased astronomically, because this is our drug of choice, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of us are, you know, we're executives, we're successful business women, we're raising children, oftentimes alone. There's no comfort in our lives because we don't have partners, and so we eat. That becomes the way we handle the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it looks like. And it's not that women don't care about themselves. They don't have any other way to comfort themselves because they don't have loving relationships, and they've got all these responsibilities. They have to just keep going. So that becomes the way they handle it. They just keep eating.
Right.
And, you know, it's a difficult thing if that has become the addiction that you have, because our society doesn't allow us to acknowledge that we're in pain. It doesn't allow us to acknowledge when we're lonely. It doesn't allow us to acknowledge when we're grieving over the loss of a relationship, whether the person died or simply left. We live with a lot of pain, and we use food to cover the pain. I had one friend who said her son had not seen her in you know, maybe 12, 13 years. And she had been a slim woman, and then he saw her again. She was huge, and he said, "What happened?" You know, and she didn't realize, and then she said, "You know what, I've been in pain all these years." She's been a very difficult marriage, and she said, "I realize I've just been eating down the pain. That's what I do."
Yeah.
So how do we help someone recognize when a weight issue might be an expression of depression or grief or sadness that they're holding on to, and they're trying to eat it away or eat it, you know, eat it down, or, you know, cover it up with the pleasure of food, and that's become an addiction? How can we help somebody recognize that in themselves, other than the mirror telling them, okay, you need to lose about, you know, 50 pounds? But how do they understand the emotions behind the eating?
Right. Well, you know, anything done in the extreme is an addiction. It doesn't matter what it is. And if eating is that go-to, which is, again, we go back to the coping mechanism. That's how one would cope to deal with emotional traumas. And you, a lot of times it's hard to cipher between things. Like, you know, I often tell my patients, I tell them, you need to get into what they call a self-rescue mode. A self-rescue mode is what am I doing to myself that is causing self-harm? Self-harm is not just, you know, having the sort of flighty thoughts of not wanting to live any longer, but if you're living, you know, are you self-harming? Are you self-harming with your habits? Are you self-harming even what your words speaking about yourself? Are you self-harming? Even in relationships, are you self-harming? So the goal is to, you know, ask yourself that and look at those habits in your life, those situations or behavior actions that are causing a detour in healthiness, and being mindful, you know. You know, as our sister Zelda says, we have to be mindful. We have to be mindful of all things that are attached to this life that we are, bless you, that we are creating. Because if you create a life of that, remember, there's a consequence. There's a situation. There is a circumstance, and there's a, you know, repercussion. So whatever you choose, you have to deal with those four occurrences. And, you know, we get impulsive, ma'am. When we're in pain, we are impulsive. We're not responding anymore. We're not thinking it out. Sometimes we overthink it and we underthink it. And then we get what they call impulsive. So we do that knee-jerk answer or solution of thinking, oh, this will work, and not even knowing that, it, you know, there's no good result is to come into that. There's, you know, that's not an option to do, you know, at all. It's just going to cause more problems than what it's worth. And, you know, none of us are perfect in this life. Please understand. We do the best we can with what we have. But always remember, no matter what comes in this life or what leaves out, you have to take care of you. And I think that's when we drop the ball on ourselves, you know. We literally do that. We, like I say, we want to save the world, but when it comes to saving ourselves, we find that so much difficult. And this thing called suppression is real. Don't you know a person can go into any addiction when they start suppressing? When you start suppressing thoughts, you start suppressing feelings, and it's building up from the inside so ferociously that you're trying to figure out, how can I deal with this? And that's what causes the addictions. It's because you don't have any other answers, because you're holding things down. You're pressing things down inside. When they have to come out, they're going to come out one way or the other. Therapy is good, people. It's nothing wrong with therapy. And even if you don't talk to anyone, talk to a book. Get a journal. Write down your feelings. Let them come out some type of way, because it's so important, you know, not to keep things inside. They don't go away. Words have tremendous power and energy. Every word in this universe has energy to it. Every word. And you have purpose. You have purpose. You may be struggling knowing what your purpose is, you know. So, you know, when things leave out of your life, you know, when we experience death of any magnitude, we feel we lose our purpose in life. Your purpose is designed. It's inside of you. Seek it. It's wherever you find your biggest pleasure. That's your purpose. So life is waiting. It's waiting for you to do something different, something you've never done before. Because we know what insanity is. Doing the same thing, expecting a different result. And you're not insane. You just haven't figured it out.
Haven't figured it out. Well, if you are listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1. We'll light your number up on our switchboard. If you're on our switchboard now and have a thought you'd like to share or a question you'd like to ask for Dr. Debbie, here we are. Just press 1. And, of course, we are talking about dealing with unforgiveness after a sudden death. Often we are faced with choices that we made during our lifetime when someone passes away, and we realize that we could have made that relationship better during their lifetime, and we didn't, and now they're gone, and we're faced with all the emotions that come with the memories, whether it's a relationship with a spouse that was unpleasant, but we stayed in it for social reasons, a relationship with a parent. Maybe we were the caregiver. Maybe we resented being the caregiver. Maybe they were verbally abusive and we took it out of feelings of obligation, but there was anger. And then when they passed, we still had anger. How do we deal with that? And that's the thing that I'd like to ask about. A lot of people who are caring for elderly parents or aunts, uncles, relatives, grandparents, sometimes that person doesn't express gratitude. Matter of fact, sometimes they're attacking, they're mean-spirited, they're emotionally and verbally abusive, and in our sense of obligation, we may take the abuse, but there's a lot of anger on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So when that person passes away, and I've seen this, you know, there's a mixture of emotions.
Yes.
On one hand, you feel relief that they're gone. On the other hand, you feel guilt that you feel relief that they're gone. And then you still feel the anger at the things they did that you never addressed because of their condition. And yet the anger is still on the inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
How does a person handle all of that mix of emotions when someone passes away? They're not sorry they're gone, but they are sorry that the relationship was bad.
Right.
Is there a way to deal with forgiveness of that person, themselves, and the whole situation so that they're not still carrying the grief that comes with unreleased anger and other negative emotions?
Yes. Well, self-compassion is a very strong tool to use in that case, Naima, because remember, if they didn't say anything, if they didn't confront it, if they never shared anything, if they just continued to take care of that person and not, express their feelings. So all of that's still in the heart. It's still there. So anger, discontentment, all of that is still, you know, very much alive, but at the same token, self-compassion, which is what that person has to do. I call it switching the spoon. When they allow themselves to know that this person was ill, so because they were ill, they were, you have to rationalize, you know, why a person would be very angry and bitter even when you're taking care of them, you know, because that's real. You know, people go through this. And you help yourself to create something that, because you could have said something to them and they may have understood and they may not understood, you know. But most people are bitter and don't understand the damage that they do. They don't know the severity of the hurt and pain that they impress upon another human being. And I often, that person that's suffering in that area, that is involved in that relationship, I often tell them, you're not damaged goods. You're not injured. You're not broken. You know, because one would feel less than, you know, especially if the words came out like, you never do anything right. You can never do this. And, you know, I'll never be happy what you've done. If that person, you're taking care of a person, that's all they're saying, and they seem like they're never satisfied.
Yeah, no matter what you do, it's not good enough. There's always criticism.
Yeah.
I find people who work as caregivers, they get burnt out and overwhelmed with ungrateful patients and clients.
Yeah.
That they deal with people that are forever complaining and never satisfied. And I had a friend in the medical field. She was a nurse. And she would leave work just so emotionally drained because people were simply unkind to her. They were not grateful. They were always, her feeling is that there was so much physical abuse that she had to take every day. When she came home, she didn't want to take any phone calls. She didn't want to talk to anybody. She just couldn't take another voice in her head complaining. And it was very difficult. I think her children were teenagers at the time, and she just couldn't deal with anything because of the extreme, I guess, emotional abuse she felt like she had to endure all day long from patients, a lot of them who were, of course, in pain. They're, you know, complaining, needing some attention. And as a nurse, she just became the target of their complaints and their dissatisfaction and their verbal abuse and all of that. And it was so overwhelming. And I often wonder, okay, why are you in that profession? It's killing you. But I guess, I mean, it was a job, but there came a point where she hated it. But, you know, okay, I got to pay the bills, I'm going to stay here. But I saw it destroy her over time. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, one of those people that ate, you know, just keep eating, eat away the pain of this, eat away the distress, you know, eat away the sadness. Just, you know, okay. Because one time we went to lunch together, and I watched her eat a whole cake. And as she was talking, she sliced that. I think I had one slice, and she ate the rest of it herself.
Wow.
And I was watching her just, you know, talking, eating, and she, you know, she had some pounds extra, and I could see that this was her coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm. It was addiction.
Yes. So yes. We got to take one last break, and we got a caller on the line. So 773-977 coming to you next. But, you know, helping people realize that they have taken on an addiction because they're not addressing a chronically painful situation, and maybe they feel like they can't get away from it, like it, maybe if it's a spouse or a job.
Mm-hmm.
How do they deal with that? But we'll be right back after this last break, and if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call now. 515-605-9325, and press 1, light your number up on our switchboard so we can take your call, and we will be right back after this last break, so we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. Stay with us.
Oh, man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456. And schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Susan Essentials is re-engineering what health looks like by leading you to the best wellness initiatives in the world. Start your coaching plan today and create a new paradigm of health. Click here to learn more.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. We are a part of the online network of Associated Internet Radio hosts, On Air. On Air empowers you with transformative news and interactive radio TV shows. This is such a wonderful time to be alive and to see our human family coming together as one community as a result of that powerful tool, the Internet. We can now talk directly to each other all over the world. There's no need for conflict or misunderstanding. There's no need for violence to solve our differences. We can talk to each other face to face until we reach an agreement. On Air offers a fantastic global guide to communicators from all over the world who are using their internet platforms to inspire us to strive to be our best selves in order to become the kind, compassionate, loving people we were all born to be. Once we do that, we'll see planet Earth transformed into a place of peace. Subscribe to the recommended YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and podcasts created by these Voices of Enlightenment. On Air provides daily news briefs and a weekly magazine to keep you abreast of events and opportunities. On Air news affiliates in television, radio, and print share information, insight, and interviews with notable personalities. Go to onaireverywhere.com for a daily dose of uplifting news. We're on air everywhere, online all the time.
Psychiatrists and psychologists and doctors and lawyers and preachers and teachers, I have found in life, in my 72 years, that I didn't have to go to God each time. And each time, he brought me on through it, you know, no matter what it was. And, you know, the mental anguish and the emotional stress that's in place on our housekeepers today in the state of Illinois is just, it's unbelievable. Most of these housekeepers are receiving maybe $12 or so an hour. They go into the home with their own problems, and then they're here with an abusive client. They're making $12 an hour. They have to clean this client's stool. They have to prepare this client's meals. They have to wash this client's clothes, and then this client, you know, has the audacity, you know, talk about him or what happened. Now, anytime a housekeeper is assigned to do a nurse's aide job, this state has taken the nurse's aide position away from all of the clients, and they've given that duty to a housekeeper. The housekeeper is not supposed to touch a client unless she has a license to do so. No kind of way to bathe her. She can help assist her into the tub and out of the tub, this and that. But the money is supposed to be going to a nurse's aide. Back in the day, and I'm speaking as a counselor with the Department of Rehabilitation Services, State of Illinois, and I'm speaking as a person who was the only person to be assigned the most productive worker in the state of Illinois with the Department of Rehabilitation Services. And my name is Lois Trask. Now, we have done nothing about the fact that all of these agencies are making maybe $135 an hour, no, maybe more. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, in 1975, a lady named Sunny Bernard operated the entire home service program by herself for 5 years out of a wheelchair with multiple sclerosis. And so she did this by herself. Now we have agencies that are making hundreds of dollars per hour, sending our workers out to work for this the people who are in need. of being assisted at home. And we're doing nothing about it. Now, Governor Rana knows about this. Our Governor Fritzner knows about this. So if we're going to pay these agencies what one lady in a wheelchair was doing by herself for 5 years, and when I came along, I was the second person to work with this lady in the wheelchair. And I worked there until, what, 1997 with her? And she was there when I left. So when you're disabled, really sometimes it's a plus for all of us if you get the right worker. Sometimes these workers, I know of some workers who killed the client. And maybe one got 12 years in prison or something. Stole the client's food stamp, bus card, what have you, and they gave her 12 years, but they're under mental anguish. They're not being paid for what they're doing. They go into the home upset. They know they got to go in there and clean their butt. They know they got to wash their clothes, the dishes, fix them some food, whatever, for $12 an hour. Now, the housekeeper should be making $12, maybe $15 per hour, and the nurse's aide, who's cleaning stool and what have you, should be making at least $25 an hour. So I hope everyone understands what I'm trying to say. But the bottom line, nobody's going to do anything about it. And it's going on, We're not helping our people. We're hurting our people. We're sending people out there who need money to take care of their children, to pay their rent. And then they have to go in there for $12 an hour, $15 an hour, whatever, and be abused, misused. And in some cases, a lot of them don't get paid.
Yeah.
And I'd like to close out with this. They have them all taking an insurance out of their check, monies for insurance every month as they work. So as soon as they become ill and they cannot make that payment, that monthly payment, well, they're responsible for the full payment, but they have no insurance at all. Okay, thank you so much, and God bless you all.
Well, thank you, Lois, and God bless you. Always appreciate your comments. You know, I think one of the most challenging jobs is caregiving, especially caregiving to people who might be at the end of life stages or disabled, as Lois speaks about, because these are people who are in their own selves, they're going through various emotional distress. And if you're the caregiver, you become the target for their venting, all of their life regrets or whatever they have on the inside. And so I know that that's a job that it takes a certain spirit to do that. And I don't think there's enough money you can pay for that. You really have to, in my opinion, you have to have a love and a forgiveness in your heart to be able to do that, because you're doing, as she described, some of the worst or some of the most perhaps undesirable things. You know, taking care of a person who might, need to be cleaned, fed, all these things, and sometimes there is no there's no gratitude expressed. Matter of fact, sometimes you get contempt from the very people. And I think unless you really have a lot of love and forgiveness and compassion inside of you, you could be pushed to the point where you almost want to commit a murder. And I've seen that happen with elder abuse, senior abuse, abuse of people who are disabled by those who just couldn't take being the target of someone else's pain, someone else's frustration, because we're just human. So
right.
Would you recommend that if someone is in a caregiving job, particularly if they're caring for someone who, you know, maybe on their last legs, you know, maybe their final hours or days or months or years or whatever the case may be, would you recommend if a person doesn't have a level of compassion and forgiveness that they just not take that kind of job?
I think so. I really think, again, you know, we do things out of necessity, mainly. We make career choices out of necessity, as well as just relationships. We put ourselves in the position where we have to select what it is quickly because something else needs to happen, you know. So I was a certified nursing assistant before becoming a counselor. So I went through grad school being a nursing assistant. So I know that at first hand, being paid a low amount of money, but having a huge heart. So that particular career, you have to have a lot of self-compassion for yourself and also compassion for the person that you are giving care to. And again, I always would tell me if that person was ever bitter, I was like, okay, that's something they're dealing with. That's not my stuff. I never adapted or never took personally when someone would lash out because that was there before I got here.
Yeah.
You know, that's
something in the inside of them. And I think
Yeah.
You got to be able to understand that. Well, I'm going to open the mic. Mama AZ had pressed one yesterday, and I guess the system didn't recognize that. So I'm going to open your mic, Mama AZ, just to make sure we don't, you know, miss the comment that you have. You're on with Dr. Debbie Green of Soulful Solutions. And Mama AZ, of course, is just an amazing spirit, enduring so much physical challenge, but still determined to bring a spiritual message to the world. So, Mama AZ.
I just need to call her. I just need to hear her voice.
Yes.
Greetings, greetings, family. Greetings, Dr. Green. I'm so appreciative of what everybody is bringing to the table, especially when they come in bodies that look like our bodies. It's time. It's so important, family, to start the healing process, you know, especially if you've grown up with alcoholic parents and gone through just horrificness of issues. And Dr. Lateef, we have to have a metaphysical show that deals with why we chose to come to certain parents to learn certain things, you know, to help the growth of one's soul. It's really, really deep, family. So I'm just grateful that I'm still on this side of the dirt, and I'm grateful that my mom decided to not abort me. And the people that I have, my extended family, I am being very appreciative of the extended family's members that I have, like yourselves, not the family that came through my mom's gate, but the family that helps us to stay grounded. Encourages us and keeps us going. It's very challenging. However, I'm grateful to see another day, family, and grateful that I can dial the telephone. And I've seen a lot in the healthcare business, how people are angry. And especially in the nursing homes and what have you, things that I see and every day I say, thank you, kind spirit. Thank us. Because at this mature age, pushing 70, you know, I'm still able to wipe my butt, even though it may be very painful. And I'm still able, family, to stand up to those ones who jerk you around like you're a dog or a rag doll, and you know, I've seen a lot, and we got a lot of healing to do metaphysically.
Yeah.
We need to talk about this, and for your time and your wisdom and your love to be a part of this female solution, because basically it is about us. We are the first teachers, the female. So I just give thanks, and that right now that's all I choose to communicate about. I'm grateful, family. I'm grateful for
You're welcome. We're
grateful to you, Mackenzie. Yeah, that's why I say, you know, when people are in the industry where they're caring for those whose bodies may not be functioning, you need to have a lot of compassion in your heart. You need to love the job that you do, because your energy is literally affecting their life and death.
Yes.
A lot of negative energy makes a person sick. So you have to be able to transmute their, if someone is verbally abusive or spewing out anger or insults, it's because they're in emotional pain, and you need to be able to transmute their hateful, hurtful behavior into love by being able to give back to them love that they're not giving to you. You must be able to give them what they cannot give to you. You must have an abundance of it inside of you to give, so that you can say kind, loving, complimentary things to somebody who's insulting you and complaining at you and ungrateful to you. You must be able to give life where life needs to be given, and that takes a certain kind of spirit. You know, you got to know that this person is not able to express kindness because of the extent of their frustration, their anger, their emotional pain. And a lot of times people are mad at God. God, you let this happen to me. Why did you let my body break down like this? Why are you making me suffer? They're angry at God. So we must show them what God looks like, and that is love and only love, not condemnation, not punishment. God allows us to learn from our experiences and develop wisdom from the consequences of our choices. But there is no punishment from a mean-spirited God. But some people feel like God did them wrong, and so they're bringing that anger at everybody. So that really, I think, you know, and my heart goes out to people who are in the caregiving business, because it is often thankless, and you're absorbing a lot of abuse, and you need to rejuvenate yourself after a day of that kind of work. So, Dr. Debbie, what kind of things do you recommend people do if they're in the kind of environment where they are being beat down and, you know, they're feeling distressed, and maybe they are using alcohol or drugs or food or excessive shopping, you know, whatever thing they've become addicted to because they can't deal with the hurt that they're living? How do you suggest that they rejuvenate themselves in a healthy way?
Well, we have to understand that what usually happens in most people's lives is that the external circumstances cause the internal conflict, and that is people placing things all around a person from past, present, even future can cause a person to think less of themselves. And when that happens, we then try to, repair. As I said, we, in our mind, you know, we try to do damage repair. Damage repair could be any addiction. Damage repair could just be, it could be so many different ways that we will try to, you know, to replenish and restore ourselves. But then sometimes, you know, we don't get the opportunity to do that, or we don't make the choice to do that. And then we start getting into these areas of, again, self-defeat, self-sabotage, and leading self-destruction. One should not live what they experience, first of all. These things are in the book of life. You know, as I said, that you're not damaged goods. You're not broken. Every beautiful, difficult area, it defines who you are. It defines who you are. And you don't take the ugly parts or the parts that you think are the painful parts and think that it's a self-destroyer, because it's not. You're not destroyed. Continue to replenish and self-rescue every day. And pray to your higher power that he will continue to watch over you and take care of you.
Talk to the higher power.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Advice. Well, hopeful solutions. Dr. Debbie. Next. Good day.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show
insight, and we appreciate all of you who listened in and called in and commented. And join us tomorrow for well-being with Beata as we continue to work on our inner and outer well-being. And, of course, we will be hearing some great travel tips from Deborah as we move around with Deborah on Saturday, 12 noon, Sunday.
The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's
show on Sunday. And we appreciate her as always. And, of course, that is 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And we will certainly look forward to you calling in on that soul purpose healing. And Monday morning mindfulness, Monday morning mindfulness with our host, Zelda Speaks, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Tuesday, self-sales with Jody Susan. And Wednesday, we will have another round of our men's only discussions with my co-host, Kareem Hamid. And so we want you to tune in for that.
Shukriya.
And have a day.
Toda. Pakistan. Shukriya. Afghanistan. Tashakur. Saudi Arabia. Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.